Welcome to this week's podcast of Breakthrough Church from Bayswater in Melbourne, Australia. For more details and further resources, visit breakthrough.org.au. We hope you enjoy today's message.
I want to share on a topic of where can I find rest? Where can I get the rest that brings peace to my soul? That's a big thing in today's society. A lot of people spend a lot of money. There's a lot of effort goes into bringing people into a place of rest. People chase it, they pursue it, they're trying all sorts of things. People try and find rest. And I'm not just talking about physical rest, obviously. I remember a preacher that I knew, and he was saying how he was doing a lot of preaching and he was going around, and he said he'd come home and he said, I'd have a good night's sleep and I'd wake up, but still feel just as tired. Have you ever done that? Have you ever slept physically? And he's like, what's happening? He said, I've had a good night's sleep. He's a fit and healthy guy. And God says, it's not your body that's tired. It's not your physical body that's tired. You can get your body rested by giving it a good night's sleep and a good meal and be ready to go. But if you are weary on the inside, if it's your spirit man, if it's your soul that is weary, then just a good night's sleep doesn't always help. Sometimes things look better, you know what I mean? You go to bed, things can look terrible and you have a good night's sleep and you wake up and the sun's up and you think, you know what, I don't know what I was worrying about last night. The darkness of night is not a good time to make life-changing decisions. You know, sometimes people feel pretty down, and one of the things you've got to learn is not to make decisions based in that environment, because you can make choices that in the morning seem like ridiculous. So you just hold yourself off. And so, maybe don't send that email at 11 o'clock at night that you wanted. You've pounded your finger like, no, 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 no. And then you say, well, why don't you just wait till 7 o'clock, watch the sunrise, and then see if you still want to send that email. Sometimes in the morning, everything's bright, and you've had a bit of a refreshing. Maybe they don't need to be called those names. I'll just delete that. anyone been there? Can hardly get the spelling out because they're trying to get that email written just to let them know, and they realize. But so sometimes you're just a good night's sleep and a change of environment can refresh you. But how many have ever been in the place where you can have a good night's sleep and it doesn't actually mean anything? Mm-hmm. You wake up and you're tired, you wake up and you're heavy. Because we are more than just physical beings. We have an inner man, we have an outer man. We have a spirit, we have a soul, we have a body. And even though our body can be going through difficulties, we can be strong in the spirit. How many know you can have a lousy night's sleep and wake up pretty good? Because you're excited and refreshed, and it's amazing when you're good on the inside, your body can get dragged along. But you've got to take care of your body. I'm not saying you can abuse that. But God is very concerned about us, spirit, soul, and body. And when I say he wants to bring us into a place of rest, and the title for this message was, where can I find rest? Where can I get rest? We're not talking, this is an ad for a new mattress, the new Snoozemaster 4000, which we're selling in the foyer, comes with a special pillow and you'll get the best night's sleep. Well, we're talking more than that. We're talking about rest that is in the soul, which is not easy to obtain and easy to get. And so I want to look at a scripture, and then I want to show how I'm going to use the cross to illustrate this as well with the switching of the sides of the cross. So if you could all look at with me to Matthew chapter 11. If you've got a Bible, if you don't have a Bible, you can just listen along, or someone's next to you, they might be able to show you what they've got. Nowadays with phones, everyone's not too far away from a Bible. Jenny, do you want to just see if this you can wipe? We don't need the hand and the foot, so I'm just saying we can, while we're reading this, if you could rub that off. Matthew 11 has an amazing account where Jesus makes this declaration, this proclamation. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Oh, there's an invitation. He says, come to me, everyone who is overloaded and feels as if they just can't make it anymore, and I will give you that most valuable possession, rest. How many know that to find internal rest is no small feat? It's no small thing to be able to rest.
You know what I mean? There's sometimes like what's happening on the inside is not always demonstrated on the outside. It's like the little boy that, you're disciplining and you say, sit down there. And he looks at you, he glares, you say, sit down. And he sits down and he looks at you and goes, but I'm standing on the inside. You know what I mean? I might be doing it on the, you might look on the outside and see me being submissive, but on the inside I am standing and I am jumping and I'm saying, I'm not sitting. How many know you can do one thing on the outside and be doing something totally different on the inside? But I also know you can be sitting there peacefully. You might be sitting here right now and everyone look around and say, oh, that person's at rest. But you could be so worried. You can be so agitated. You can be so anxious. What's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen next week? What's going to happen to this part? What I'm getting this doctor's report tomorrow. I've got this happening. What's going to happen here? What about my family? Not even if I'm worried about myself, what's going to happen here? And we have something which we have drilled into people, which is a fear of the future. You know what's going to happen? We're destroying our planet. We're destroying our souls. We're destroying each other. And it's such a big thing. Kids now are taught, the parents, the adults, not looking after the planet. You know, that's what they're taught now. The adults are not looking after your planet. You are going to go in a generation where it's going to be terrible for you. And so they're taught to fear the future. And so there's this constant pressure to be worried about what's happening, be worried about what's going to happen. So you can be sitting on the outside, but totally agitated on the inside. And so this invitation from Jesus is pretty amazing. He said, come, everyone who's got this, just this feels this pressure, come, and I will give you rest. All right, so if I could illustrate it like this on here. So here I am. That's me. How do you know it's me? There you go. Now you know it's me. All right, there I am. And how many know this sense? Pressure. The weight and the cares of life, the things, the problems you've gone through, the regrets that you have, the fears of the future. It says pressing. How many have ever felt that pressure? It's pushing. It's tangible at times. Haven't ever been in a place where it's just like this, but you feel like you cannot breathe. Yeah. It's like I'm being smothered and there's nothing around me, yet I feel as if someone is strangling me. My muscles are so restricted. I'm under so much anxiety, you can feel that panic rising. Well, that's pressure. And Jesus said, hey, so here we'll do Jesus. Wow, I haven't practiced this one, so this will be interesting. So Jesus has got a beard too. But he won't be a stick figure like me because he won't recognize him otherwise. There's Jesus. Give him a gown, like a thing like that, like they wear. He can have sandals. Does that look like Jesus? There you go. And we'll put a belt on him. Okay. People over here. There we go. Yeah, they can see at the same time. See? Christine said, can you show the people over there? It's a little trick I've got here. It's almost like I'm a magician being able to. Look at that, and it goes even then. See? Hey, I got face on both sides. That's a bit weird. All right, so on this side, on Jesus' side, he's saying, put it back for the middle people because they. No, actually, we'll do it for this side. Aww. Yeah. Okay, this is. I don't know how to represent no pressure. So I'm just going to make it nice and light. All right, pressure is down. Push, but over here, it's no pressure. So this is rest. People say, why don't you just write rest? Because when I swing it around, it is back to front, so I can't use any writing. So Jesus said, this is what he said, and this is what he said, come to me, and I will give you rest. All right, so that's the power. Now, the most amazing, and why I love to use this cross is, in order to transfer over to this side, we also do another transfer, don't we? Jesus comes over to this side. And this is the power of the cross, is because some people think that things like this are just, well, just take it away, but it's not. It's got to be dealt with. There's things that are in your life. There's a reason for the pressure. And if I just said to you, don't worry about it, it doesn't always work like that. And one of the ways that Jesus illustrated the pressure of sin and the guilt and the shame and everything that we feel, he often used the financial example. He said, if you owe money, he said, sin is like owing money. In fact, he said he wanted to show an example at one time for someone who had been forgiven a lot, and then he had his own his friend who owed him a small amount. So he was forgiven, and it actually uses this thing called a talent, which is a measure of money in the Bible times, but it's a very large measure of money. It's worth a lot of money. And he said, you know, you got 10,000 talents. Equivalent would be like saying $20 billion. Wow. All right? It's not a little amount. All right? So when Jesus said, this man, you owe $20 billion, turn to the person next and say, how would you like to, what would you feel if you owed $20 billion? I'm guessing closer to this side. All right? If you owe $20 billion right now and you had to pay it or you go to prison and your family be sold into slavery, because there was no Chapter 11 back then. Chapter 11 was you go to jail and your family gets sold into slavery. All right? So that's a real pressure. To owe money like that is no small thing. All right? So if you owe $20 billion, that's a pretty huge sort of pressure. And Jesus said, now you have someone who owes you $20,000. So it's not a small amount. It's not a $20,000 sounds like a lot until you compare it with $20 billion. So the king said to his servant who owed him $20 billion, he said, hey, listen, don't go to prison. I'm going to release you from the whole debt. It's amazing. And then he goes home and he's got someone who owes him $20,000 and he says, pay up. And because he couldn't pay up, he sends him to prison. And Jesus said, how does that make sense? How could you be forgiven by so much and yet not show a small amount of the same forgiveness? That would almost be like people standing here who've been forgiven by Jesus holding a grudge against their neighbor. Just doesn't happen. Just people don't think like that, do they? Do you know what I mean? Once you're forgiven, you offer that same level of grace to everybody in your life. And anyway. So, but forgiveness of a debt has got to be done by a certain person. Who I don't want to embarrass anyone, but so let me make it an example. Let's say Eugene, so I don't know this situation. Let's say Eugene owes $100,000 on a house debt that he's still paying off. How exciting would you say, Eugene, if I came to you this morning and said, your debt is forgiven?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the bank, I believe it's the ANZ, I forgive your debt. I'm not paying it off, I'm just forgiving it. You know what I mean? When they wipe it off the books? Yeah. How many know, how excited would Eugene be in reality? Yeah. No, he wouldn't. No. Why not? I'm not from the ANZ Bank. I'm the pastor of the church, come on. Who else would like their debts forgiven? Okay, there you go, forgiven debt. Anyone else want your debt forgiven? House paid off today. How many know forgiveness can only be given by someone who's in authority? Forgiveness by someone who's not an authority is useless.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. So if I tell you you're forgiven, you say, that's fine, but you're not the one I've offended.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? If you've upset someone else and say, oh, I forgive you, that's good, but it's them. It's the person you've done it to that needs to forgive you. You know, you might have forgiven. You might have racked up $1 million worth of parking tickets, and I say, I forgive you. I can't. The government has got to forgive you. You know, someone comes to me and says, "Oh, I've just been sentenced to 10 years in jail." I said, "I forgive you. Don't go." That's all very well, but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Forgiveness means nothing unless you're in a position to authorize it. So that's one of the problems people think, when Jesus said, just come to me. See, that's like the bank manager saying, come to me, all you who are in heavy debt. As opposed to your friend. It's got to be someone with the authority to deal with it. And that's why this is so important. It's got to be not just the fact that you come into freedom. Someone's got to deal with it. Someone's got to actually pay for it. Someone's got to do, you know, you are guilty and I am guilty. I can't just say to you, be forgiven, because someone's got to pay for it. Someone's got to go to jail. It'd be different if I said, listen, I'm actually totally without any parking tickets. I've got nothing against me. But you know what? They've sent you to jail for a year for not paying. I will go in your stead. I'll go. All right? I will go and I will spend a year in jail for you. Someone's got to pay for it. So the only way I can forgive you is I'm willing to deal with it.
Yeah.
Now, I can't do it if you say, hey, Eugene, I've also got $1 million of debt. I'll just go for both of us. How many know one prisoner can't do two sentences? Hey, I'm already here, so I might as well do yours. It's like one time I knew of a kid working in a particular store, and they rang someone and said, I can't be there on Thursday night. Could you do my shift for me? It was another worker. They said, yes, I can easily do your shift. Then we found out they said they were already on that night. They said, well, because it'll be easy because I'm already there. You know, of course I can do your shift. I'll be already there, so I might as well just do the two, get paid for both. Doesn't work like that. So I can't go to prison for you unless I'm totally free. So that's the problem with me forgiving everybody is I've already got my own debts. I'm already under my own load. I can't. It doesn't work like that. You have to find somebody. And there's only one person that was able to say, I am debt free. I'm the only one that has true rest. And so what I'm asking you to do is come over to my side and I will give you rest. But in order to do that, someone had to pay for the pressure that you're feeling and the things that you're feeling. See, the pressure they're feeling, the weight is literally guilt. It's trying and striving to make up for all the things you've done wrong. It's a striving from working and trying to be right. The striving here is a striving that says never enough. Never enough. Always trying to make up ground that you can't do. You know what I mean? I don't know whether you've ever been in that place where you're trying to make up ground and you're just going backwards. And it's never enough. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter what steps you take, what you strive, it's never enough. This side is actually the reason there's such pressure. It's the never enough side.
Yeah.
There is never, never, never enough. So Jesus has to take that pressure and to release us because there's only one person who has done enough to do it. When Jesus died on the cross, he actually said, it is finished. And then when John was writing this, one of his apostles was writing about this many years later. And he said, what happened there was Jesus became the satisfaction of everything that was required for the payment of that debt. Jesus actually fulfilled everything that was required for the payment of debt. The technical term for that is propitiation. Sounds like I'm swearing if I say it quickly, so. But it is actually a technical word which actually means, and John was using this word, it means fully satisfied everything that is required, every debt that needs to be paid, every sin that needs to be forgiven, he has done it. So only one person could actually do a swap over. Now, I can't swap with you. If I swap with you, we just go from pressure to pressure.
Yeah.
If I swap with you, we just get pressure. So how was Jesus able to do this? Well, he knew that he was going to go to the cross and he was going to take my pressure, the pressure to perform, the pressure to be, the pressure to achieve, the pressure to be someone, the pressure just to have no regrets. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't like it when people just come up and glibly say, if you got something, you say, have no regrets. Well, you don't know what they've done. They should regret some things. You know, regret is actually a natural and normal thing. It helps you actually stop doing things in the future. Yeah. If you don't regret something you did today, you just repeat it. Mm. But how many know that regrets can become a pressure like this? Regrets can become a weight. Because there's just some things that I forever regret. There's mistakes I've made, and mistakes is too kind a word. Mistakes are sometimes when you intend to buy something and you get it out of the box and you've got the wrong thing. You know, I went down, we bought drinks from the supermarket. Christine said, can you get some soda water? And I got some tonic water. Soda water, tonic water, they look the same, taste not the same. If you don't know the difference between tonic water and soda water, I learnt there's a difference. One's bitter and got a whole lot of sugar put in, it's got two-thirds of your daily sugar intake in a little bottle of tonic water, and it's still bitter. So I went to get soda water, I got tonic water. That's a mistake. And sometimes when we talk about sins as if they're mistakes, we really lose the weight of what we've done. I'm talking about the rebellious things I've done, the things I've done when I have determined and set my jaw and done what I shouldn't do and behaved badly and said, I don't care, I'm going to do this anyway. Those sorts of regrets. The regrets where I look back and say, if I could have my time again, I would not do that. And the trouble is, if I do have my time again, I do it over again anyway. Paul said in the book of Romans, he said, the thing I say I'm not going to do, I end up doing. The very thing I say I won't be, I will be. I don't intend to be, but I just do it. I've said, you know, I will not do this. I remember as a 17-year-old boy, I'm saying, okay, I've messed up and I've told my friend this and I've been a bad friend. Well, I'm going to be a better friend. I'm not going to do that anymore. No more. I made a determination and that lasted a few days. Not because I didn't determine it, because I just found I couldn't. I was a jerk. I was doing the things that were just, I didn't mean to do, I didn't want to do, but I did them anyway. So there's sins that I don't want to do that I do anyway, and Jesus is the only one that has been able to set me free from this regret where I no longer, someone can't just come to me and say, don't have regrets. What I can say is my regrets have been dealt with. So different to don't have regrets. I say all that I did, someone has actually taken the punishment for, and he has released me from them. I am forgiven from them. So different to what just someone saying no regrets. So how does Jesus actually say for this process of rest? All right, with the forgiveness, it's a process called repentance. You turn away from what you're doing and embrace who he is and make a brand new allegiance. You follow a new leader in your life, and that's called repentance, and you turn around. That's what the cross does. But what did Jesus talk about here? He actually didn't say it was about the cross. Matthew 11 says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. How? He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my load is light. So what we're talking about here is a yoke. A yoke is what they used, and they still use it in many countries today. It was when they got two animals together and they would put them on a harness where there was a piece of timber that would link the neck of one animal to the neck of the other. I know there are other types of yoke, but this is the type what we're talking about here, where there would be two animals, say two oxen, and one would be side by beside the other one, and a timber would go between the two and connect the two animals, and then from that timber it would be put to a cart or a plow or something behind it. The two oxen together would pull, and the yoke would connect the power of the two oxen to the cart. So they would work together. And so what happens is in a yoke is that as they push, the shoulders grab hold, and it brings the strength of them both together. And Jesus is saying, hey, come and get your yoke with me, but you'll find that when we come together, when I push, your yoke's not difficult. Yeah. It's not a grating, chafing, struggling. When you're on this one, it's like I am dying with the weight. This thing's going backwards and I'm being dragged with it. You know, it's like you've got a load of rocks and it's been pushed over the cliff and you're trying to hold up and you're just going backwards. He said, but this yoke, come on me, and you'll suddenly find, wow, how does this work? How can I be in a yoke? Because one of the oxen can be taking the lion's share of the pressure. And actually what they would do is in many places they would get a mature, strong oxen and they'd put a young oxen with it to teach it the ways. So the mature one would show him and eventually would get the younger one to develop so they can share. But they have to learn the rhythms of the yoke. A yoke is something you have to get into rhythm with in order to be effective. So, you know, there's two people working together. It reminds me of the joke of the two guys who was on a tandem bicycle riding up a very steep hill. And they get to the top and they're exhausted. You know what a tandem one is? One at the front, one at the back. both pedaling, and they get to the top, and one turns around the back, and he's sweating, and he says to his mate at the back, he says, "That was the steepest hill ever." He said, I was actually thinking there's a few times we're almost going to roll backwards down the hill. And his friend said, "So did I. That's why I kept the brakes on the whole time." Sometimes do you feel like you're doing life with something that's got the brakes on? Yeah, pushing and struggling. This is not working. So Jesus said, "Come to me, everyone who's in this position." All right? So everyone who is here, come to me. But what he actually says he'll give you is not a magic wand. I was going to bring a little wand, you know. You know, the magic wand of forgiveness and everything's good. Tap me on the head. Some people want that at a church. They come and, "Father, you know, pastor, just use your hand. Give me the magic wand. You know, make my problems go away." Oh, no. There's more to it than this. You've got to do it like Jesus said. I can't just sort of tap you. Jesus said, he didn't say, "Come to me and I will make all this disappear." He said, "I will take it from you, but I won't make it disappear. I'll have to deal with it. But in order for you to come," he said, "we've got to do something." He said, "Take my yoke upon you." And this is why I really like this one, I think. Because you know what? When you do this, it's almost like the side of a yoke. Yeah. All right? So Jesus said, "You're on this side." He said, "Come and take my yoke and you'll be on this side." "Ah, you're on the easy side." He said, I'll do the heavy lifting and get rid of this stuff. He said, "My yoke is easy. My burden is light." And I had this picture. This is what I imagined in this verse was saying. It was saying, so here I am. So anyone from the sides? This works for both sides, Christine, just to make sure. So here I am under the heavy weight. Jesus is calling and said, "Anyone who wants, come and take my yoke upon you." But he didn't actually say, "Come and take a yoke." He said, "Come and take my yoke." When someone specifies "my" as opposed to "a" or "this" or "the," if he said, "Come and take the yoke upon you," what would that imply? That would imply there's one yoke. Yeah. All right? So if Jesus said, "Come and take the yoke," but he said, "Come and take my yoke," that could imply there's more than one yoke. There's Jesus' yoke. Could it be possible that you are always in a yoke? This is not an invitation to get in a yoke. It's an invitation to switch yokes. So you say, "But I'm not in a yoke to anybody." Yeah, I know that feeling. I'm free to do my own thing. Totally free. Go where I want, be where I want to be, do what I want to do. Except when I try and do right and do good by myself, and it just, I can't do it. Has anyone ever been to the ride at Dreamworld where you can drive T-model Ford cars around? Okay, our kids have done it. You get in this, it's like a ride, and you sit in a T-model, and it's actually an petrol-powered motor, so it's actually a little thing that drives, and you get behind it, and the kid gets the steering wheel. No steering wheel for the parent. They're looking at me like, "What sort of ride is this?" It's a bit scary to start with. Because kids, you know, like, can't imagine Caitlin, you know, behind the steering wheel. When she's little, I only mention because she's here, full of excitement. I'm going to do this. She almost has to stand on the seat now. Away we go. Off. But you know, there's this little thing that the wheels turn with the steering wheel. But in the middle of the car, which is different to all the other T-model, is there's a set of rollers, and then there's a single rail that goes around a path. So that as we're doing, let's see if I can explain it a bit better. So here's the car here, and here's the wheels. And there's a rail that goes around the path like that, and underneath, so like that, there's the car, there's the path. Underneath there's a set of rollers there that will let you drive about this far from side to side. So even if Caitlin decides to go this way, go off to the side, once it hits the roller takes over and it doesn't matter where the steering wheel is, it'll follow the path. So you can go from side to side to side to side, and the kid feels like, I'm steering. I'm in charge. I'm doing this. I drove all the way around there. I'm like, well, high five, you know. The truth is, you could let go of the steering wheel, you'd end up back at the same place. Because you're steering, but you're not in control. You got the hand on the wheel of your life, but you know what? There's things that you're not in control of. There's things that we don't get to choose. You get to make choices, but not to choose the consequences. Life is, you can make choices, but not, you can't choose the consequences. People want to choose to be bitter, but not choose the consequences of that bitterness. They think you can, you know, you can fool God in this. We can make it work. God's like, you know what? The problem is, because of the sin that we are in, we are yoked together with someone who is not good. The Bible calls the devil the god of this world. Jesus knew the devil as a real person. He was not equal with God, but he is a real being. And he has become the Lord and the master over our sinful life and the wickedness that we endure. And I'm going to say that when Jesus said, take my yoke upon you, he was asking you to exchange your current yoke, and you have the devil as your second yoke person. You say, well, that's not true. I never feel his influence. Well, just try and go too far and feel out where he pulls you back. Yeah. Just feel the life that he will drag you into when you don't even know that you're wanting to go that path. He's pretty icky. And you look over to the side and you say, I don't have the devil. I've got whatever. And he says, yeah, I can just look like whatever you want me to look like. I'm your self-ego. I'm your hero. I'm whatever. I'll just look whatever you need me to look like to make you relax and think I'm in a good partnership here. And so Jesus is not saying, come and take the yoke. He said, come and take my yoke. So now you've got to see what the yoke that he's talking about is a comparison. The yoke I'm doing, he said, well, what's my yoke like? He said, well, my yoke's easy. My burden is light. Why? Because I'm the only one that can do the switch and take this part. The devil's like, no, I'll just load you up. If you want to switch with me, you just get worse. There's nothing, no benefit. But with Jesus, there is a benefit. So let's read now carefully what he says. Take my yoke, verse 29, upon you. And then he goes on to say, for my yoke is easy and my load is light. But listen what it says here. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Now, this is the part that makes me understand why I can't just sort of say, magic wand, take all your pressures. I know Jesus has done it, but how many know that if you take a yoke, just like the two oxen, you've got to learn to walk in sync, because if not, you still carry the weight when the other one is. If the other one is not moving and you move, it all becomes your weight. It becomes all your pressure. So if you don't learn to step in time with the larger oxen, if you step forward first, you have to carry all the weight. If you don't step in line, it chafes on your neck as it drags you forward. So if you don't get in harmony and sync with this oxen, if you don't take a step with him, it means that it'll be hard for you still. So he said, take my yoke upon you. And then he said, learn from me how to do this. It is actually a process to learn, because sometimes, you might not have experienced this, if I went out and forgave everybody of their debts today, what would some people do tomorrow? Get more debt. It's not the debt that's the problem, it's the addiction to spending. Some people, if you could release them and they think, oh, I've got a problem with debt. No, they've got a problem with life and an attitude that has got them into this debt. And so just forgiving someone doesn't mean that they walk free from it. because sometimes you get free, and some people think, oh, that's free to now go and do something else. You know, I remember seeing a story once of someone who got heavily addicted to gambling, and they got themselves into all sorts of difficulty. And so someone came along to them and took pity on them, and they were racking up, like, you know, they had $50,000 of debt, and it was actually a housewife, so it was a pretty tragic thing, hiding all the finances, trying to, you know what I mean, how they're covering everything. Husband doesn't know. Husband doesn't know. So, you know, she's trying to juggle everything till he can't find it. And a friend takes pity and pays off the debt. And she thinks, oh, I've got $50,000 now in the bank. So the next day, she says, I think I can do this and actually make money. And so before she knows it, she's back in worse situation, because he freed her from the debt but didn't free her from herself. He freed her from the outward pressure, but not from the pressure that comes from inside. And this is what this is about. This is not just about learning how to get free from the outward pressure. And Jesus said, I'll do this here. He said, I will now teach you how to walk in sync with me to stay free from that pressure, to walk in a place of rest. Remember we said never enough, never enough. That striving to prove yourself, to prove yourself, to prove yourself. Instead of being able to say, I am a forgiven man and I am loved. Yeah. And now everything I do is not to prove myself. It's not to find that fourth grade teacher that told me I was never going to amount to anything and shove it up their face. Look at my resume. Some people find that motivating. But you know what? That's a hard little demon sitting on your shoulder saying, never enough, never enough, never enough. And you know, the funny thing is, the terrible thing is, it's funny in terms of how ridiculous it is. If you ever found that fourth grade teacher and you shoved the resume in their face and you walked off, you go, that wasn't near as satisfying as I thought it would be. Because I'm still me. I was me before and I'm me after, and having a resume and saying, look what I have made, look who I am, look what I've done, and I'm still me. And so you blame others and say, well, if they would have proved me and this would happen and this happened, and I blame this and blame this, and you just don't realize you just need to learn how to get into the yoke of Jesus and then say, Jesus, now I'll teach you how to walk this out. I'll teach you how to walk out a rest. But you've got to learn to get in sync with me. You've got to learn how to do the things that I tell you to do. You know, I always think it funny when, you know, sometimes we'll have someone come up to us and they say, oh, how did you ever do that? Our kids might be well behaved at a time when they're watching. Because sometimes they're not always well behaved, but when they're growing up, they're well behaved. And they say, oh, how can you have such well behaved kids? And we say, oh, well, you know, I don't know, you just got to do a few things. And they say, oh, no, tell us, really, tell us. We want a parent just like you. So we start to tell them, but immediately it's like, yeah, no, but we won't do that. But tell us your secrets. Well, just, I'll tell you the secret. Do it the way you think you should be doing it. Oh, I like that secret. Hey, man, oh, that's a good secret. Yeah, because that's all you're going to hear anyway. You know, sometimes they want to hear, but then they don't want to hear. We say, Jesus, teach us. And Jesus, all right, what you got to do is you got to forgive. Oh, don't tell me that rubbish. Tell me the real secret. And Jesus is like, okay, I'll just wait till you've chafed a little bit and pulled the load a little bit and struggled a little bit. And when you're ready to learn, I'll teach you how to get in sync with me. And you've got to actually step like I step and walk like I walk. And as I've learnt to do that with Jesus, as he's taught me to walk in sync with him, his burden, it's light. The yoke, it's actually easy. There's not the pressure. I go to bed and I can sleep the sleep of the forgiven. That's a powerful sleep. Not because I've said to myself 20 times going to sleep, I am forgiven, I am forgiven. No, I go to sleep knowing I am forgiven. Because I've been forgiven by someone with authority to forgive me. I go to sleep with someone who takes my cares. We have learnt to do something in sleep. I actually talked to the Lord about this. I mentioned this because maybe someone here is having real trouble sleeping. So, and I said to the Lord, why do we sleep? Why did you create us to sleep? It's the most useless function ever. Do you know what I mean? I'm a doer. I'm a get things done. Sleep was always an interruption to my life. You know, I'd enjoy it, but, you know, like, couldn't you have created us that we didn't need it? You know, why do we need to go into this place of comatose where we're totally defenseless? We can't do anything. If something happened, someone's got to wake us up. Well, that person's got to be awake for it to happen. If we're all asleep, it's... So it's a funny thing, this sleep. Why do I need this rhythm of sleep? And as I discovered, you know what God says about himself, I never sleep and I never slumber. It's actually one of the statements he makes about himself. I don't go to sleep, God says. He says, you sleep because I don't. I want you to have a period every day where you just totally let go. And for 8 hours on a good night, for 8 hours, if I don't do something, nothing gets done. And he has taught us to make use of the 8 hours that we're asleep and say, God, while I'm asleep, you're working. While I'm resting, you're still doing stuff. You are working and you're... But I'm, you know what? I'm just resting. And that has taught me, that's my heart attitude during the other 16 hours. So even though I'm busy, I'm still resting. Learning to rest. Learning to rest. But I had to do that by learning to get this in sync with how God wants to do things. And I want you to just appreciate the yoke that Jesus has given us and how unique it is. And there's no one else could offer us this yoke.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast from Breakthrough Church. We hope it helps you in your life as a follower of Jesus. If you have any questions or would like someone to talk to or to pray with, we would love to hear from you. You can find all of our contact details at breakthrough.org.au. Have a great week.